This is All Things Git, the podcast about Git. I'm Edward Thompson.
And I'm Martin Woodward.
So today we're doing something a little bit different. Usually we try to have a guest on to talk to us about something they're doing, maybe how they're building software or how they're using Git or how they're building teams. But
hey, I'm such an infrequent co-host. I'm basically a guest. But why don't I interview you, Ed?
How about excellent. That? Excellent.
So we're in the middle of conference city season right now, and we're having kind of a little, there's a little break while the Easter happens, so we can eat lots of chocolate and then go back on the road again. And you were at GDC last week. How was that, first of all?
Yeah, I was. I was at GDC, which is the Game Developer Conference, if you're not familiar with it. It was great. I'm not a game developer. And in fact, I don't even play games. Do you, Martin?
No, I play games with my son. Like, I play Rocket League and a couple of others, but I've never been a gamer. I've written a few games, you know, when I was growing up, but I've never been a gamer because I think it's because you're a coder. Well, we're both coders. You see it as the Matrix, and you know that you're only just doing something because some arbitrary person defined the rules to be that way. And I get more annoyed at the coding than, you know, my ability to do it. So I'll do the odd multiplayer game, you know, when I'm playing against humans, but I've just no interest in playing games just against a computer. I don't know about you.
Yeah, that's true. I used to play like Quake.
Yeah.
In fact, so you and I, we worked at a company called Team Prize, which spun out of a company called SourceGear, which used to build version control software.
Yeah.
And when I was at SourceGear, we actually had a map of the SourceGear building. So we would play the multiplayer Quake, you know, like in the afternoon when we were sort of needed to recharge.
Yeah.
And we would play on our map. So we would play Quake within our own building. It was kind of weird.
Was that in the big building rather than, because we had a fancy building when I was working for you, which was like an old bank. But this was, you had before when you had a massive like warehouse thing.
Yeah, it was the massive warehouse.
Yeah, it makes more sense. Cool. No, I did a bit of that. I also get motion sickness really easily. So a lot of the first person shooters would make me feel travel sick, and I can't play them too long. And then, but anyway, this isn't about gaming. While you're at GDC, you were talking to a lot of people about, lots of people. Was it the latest Stack Overflow survey said it's over 70% now of developers are using Git? It was towards 80, wasn't it? I seem to remember.
So the 2017 Stack Overflow survey was like high 70s%. The 2018 Stack Overflow survey, and you know, let's face it, these are just statistics, right? Said that 90% of developers are using Git in some fashion.
Yeah. Now, interestingly, 90%. It was quite good because like the Subversion number went up as well as the Git number, as well as the TFVC number. They all went up. So I'm hoping that means that more people are using version control. And a lot, it seems, you know, more people are using Git and something else.
Right.
So sometime.
Or just more people who use version control were taking the survey.
Well, there is that, you know. So.
Yeah. I'm skeptical about these numbers, but that's... that is crazy, though.
Yeah.
I mean, Git is just dominant, right?
Yeah, and now the place where it struggled the most has been the gaming community, especially the studio games, because of the fact that especially large studio games have huge binary assets. But even with indie game developers, there have a different challenge where it's often, you know, one person with some designers, you know, and a small number of people. And so there's kind of less need for version control when you find game development by Dropbox happening, scarily enough, you know.
So, absolutely.
What kind of conversations were you having with there? How are people finding Git and all that sort of stuff?
I was having a lot of conversations about people getting started with Git. As you said, like the AAA studios are using, sorry, if you're not familiar, if you also don't play games, the AAA studios are the ones producing the giant games, like the Halos of the world and the Grand Theft Autos, right? Those are the people who are just on huge teams building huge games over the course of years.
And they have massive, massive budgets, and games now make more than Hollywood movies. So, you know.
Oh, it's insane.
Yeah. Yep. It's a big
But so they're using like really custom stuff. They're maybe Perforce or Plastic SCM, stuff that's really built for their workflows. And so they're not using Git generally. They're just too big. even as Microsoft has been trying to scale Git to like the Windows code base, we're talking about still another dimension of usage, especially with big files, as you said.
Yeah. Now, we have some game studios inside Microsoft as well. And I know that people, you know, and I know a lot of those people are using like TFVC as well as Git and things like this. So, right. You know, but it's an area where centralized version control seems to keep holding its own because it has certain advantages to them.
That's right. That's exactly right. But the smaller studios, indie studios, are totally looking at Git. And it's interesting to see them adopt it and struggle with it because Git is not perfect here, right? Git was not built for binaries. Git was not built for, textures and audio and the like images and movies that people are trying to put into it. And so you could try to use Git LFS. You could try to find some other way to version those assets, those resources. As a Git person, I'm like, yes, please use Git LFS. That's the right way to do it. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people are doing other things like mixing Git and Dropbox or Google Drive. It's wild. Mm. But I had a lot of conversations with people who were not even doing that. People who were just using Dropbox or people who were just using some file share, mm-hmm. and they were just starting to get into Git. So it was an interesting conference for me. Usually I go to conferences and I talk to people who are using Git.
Yeah.
And comfortable with Git and trying to level up their skills. Yeah. And this was a conference where people were just getting started.
Cool.
And so it was a nice refresher. Yeah. To remember that people are still getting started with Git and need some getting started guidance.
Well, it's really interesting as well, because a lot of the fundamentals in like Git makes a lot of heuristics, you know, and that's one of the things when we were getting used to Git, having done previous version control systems before, that was one of the things that like freaked us out, as well as was like, oh yeah, this is why it's so effective, because it just makes a lot of guesses and makes a lot of heuristics, but it's doing those based on the fact that you're editing source control, not
right.
honking binaries, you know? So yeah. Right. Anyway, so when you're talking to a lot of these people, that are getting started with Git, this is cool. Let's talk about like Git configuration, because I just this morning there was an update to Git for Windows. It must have come out recently because I got a prompt to upgrade Git for Windows, and I went through the usual sort of setup thing where it asks me, you know, about line endings and a bunch of other stuff, and I always just hit next because I set it up once, and so I'm just hoping it's remembered my previous settings. And I quite right. like, you know, Vim, despite the fact I am on Windows, I'm happy with that. But anyway, so let's talk. You know, so when you were talking with them, was it Git? Like, how were they handling their Git configuration? Had they got that figured out? Like, did they know? Let's start with Git ignore. You know, were people aware of even the fact that Git? What is Git ignore, and were people aware that it existed?
What is Git ignore? Git ignore is a file that will, it's a metadata file. It's a configuration file for Git that will let you instruct Git on the files that it should not include in version control, that it should ignore. So you want things like your temp files. Like if you said you were a VI user, VI will create swap files, right? So that if it crashes, that it could recover the file. If you ever try to edit the same file twice in VI, it'll let you know that. And the way that it knows that you're editing a file is through this swap file. But you don't want to check that in, because if you were to commit that to version control, when you or when one of your coworkers would pull that repository down, that swap file would be there. And so VI would still think that you were editing the file because you checked in its metadata file. So you can't check that in. What you want to do is put it into Git ignore, so that when you run Git status, you don't see it. When you run Git add, it won't add it. That's what Git ignore does. It keeps those files out of version control.
And it's not just VI, is it? Nearly basically every editor in the world. We used to call them turd files. I don't know if that's like the polite mechanism, if it's a better. We right. will be the like Eclipse creates them, IntelliJ creates them, Visual Studio certainly creates a bunch of them. It creates different ones depending on the project types and things like that. So these turd files, these random files that get created that don't want to be versioned, how do you like they don't all begin with dot. You know, sometimes you do want like files checked in. So how do you know which files to ignore? And how do you, so you tell Git the, in the Git ignore file to ignore certain stuff, but how do you know which ones to ignore?
Yeah, you don't want to just do anything that starts with a dot. I mean, you could, it takes wildcards, the Git ignore file does. But yeah, you don't want to exclude everything that starts with a dot, because my CI system, it has a YAML file that starts with a dot. So yeah, you do want to check that in. So what you really want to do is get a Git ignore that's customized for your project type. And the best way to do that is to go to the GitHub repository, because there is a GitHub site, of course, that has a list of the Git ignores for all the various types of projects that you could get started with. So if you are a Visual Studio user, you would grab the Visual Studio Git ignore and put that in your repository as your .gitignore file. And that is the easiest way to get started, because it's kind of this crowdsourced piece of knowledge that you can just grab and go.
The Git ignores always live in the root of your, so it's a file called .gitignore. Does it always live at the root of your Git repository, or can it actually live anywhere in your Git repository? Or
So you can kind of chain them. Like the easiest way is just to put it right at the root, and that is, you know, the sort of canonical place. And but if you have a folder and you want to do some custom stuff just in that folder, you don't want to put it in the root because it's starting to get a little bit hairy, it's starting to get a little bit complicated. Yeah, you can have multiples, but the easiest way to get started is just put one in the root. Just grab and go to github.com/github/gitignore, download the one that is right for your project and get started. But there's actually even an easier way. If you are using, you know, a hosting provider, which you probably are, whether it's GitHub or Visual Studio Team Services or whatever, most of them, when you create a new repository, have a little dropdown that says, what kind of project are you going to be using here? And it will then grab this Git ignore for you. So you don't even have to do anything. You can just say, I'm getting started with a Java project, and it will know the various types of turd files that your editors are going to write, whether it's IntelliJ or Eclipse, and it'll put those in your Git ignore for you. So you don't even have to worry about it. You can just say, boom, Java project or Visual Studio or Unity project, whatever. You know, they're all out there and they're ready to go. So you don't even have to think about it.
Yeah, I was just looking in that GitHub repo now, and there is one there for the Unity developers in terms of, and a lot of them are Visual Studio Unity, you know, Visual Studio turd files, like the SUOs and the, you know, interestingly, they've got it to include SLN and Unity proj and CS proj files, which I would actually disagree with. You know, not checking in. So it's always interesting to have a look at some of these, you know, some of these Git ignore files, and be, you know, because some of them you can be opinionated with them at times.
Yeah, that's right.
I've worked on Java teams where they exclude all, like I've worked on Java teams where they don't mandate an IDE, and then they exclude all IDE configuration files. And just have the Java source, but that means then that you can't, it makes it really hard to share settings between the team. So
yeah, that's exactly right, unless you're using Maven or something that auto generates those for you.
Yeah And then you end up checking in scripts to generate your settings and blah blah blah, I suppose. But and it, but then you're just fighting the tool in certain circumstances. But anyway, Git ignores be opinionated. Your project can be opinionated. Who knew? It's not just curly braces, you know.
That's exactly right. But once you download this and get started, then you can customize it once to match the opinions of your
team. Just a text file. So hey, is there any, you've had to like write code which parses a Git ignore? Is there any like magic in a Git ignore that people don't know? Because I know you can use wildcards like star dot, but is that a full regex? Is it, or
no?
What's the deal?
Thank God, no, it's not a full regular expression. It is just sort of wildcard matching. So it's bad, but it's not so bad. It's the negation that's the hard part, because you can say, "I want to ignore star dot c," I don't know, or for example, Maybe those get auto-generated by a script or something. Maybe you've got some thing that generates .c files.
Or something like that. Yeah.
Or start.temp. But then you can say bang at the beginning of a line, foo.c or foo.temp. And so that will exclude everything that ends in .temp except foo.temp.
So right.
It gets complicated really quickly, or it can get.
And you can have folder names in there as well, can't you? So you can say anything beginning with my folder name and all that sort of stuff.
That's right.
And are they always case sensitive, git ignore?
Well, that's a great question.
Oh, here we go. That was an accidental good question.
You know, I don't actually know the answer to that. On a case sensitive file system, of course, your git ignore will be case sensitive.
See, this is the thing with version control systems that are cross platform, you know, and you have to work across file systems. But yeah, I was just, the reason I asked is because I was looking at the Unity one and I noticed they were doing like square brackets, uppercase L, lowercase L, or no, square brackets, uppercase T, lowercase T, emp, you know, within square brackets. So, so it's basically saying either big T or little T and then temp, the rest of temp slash. So I was like, oh, wow, case sensitivity. Hadn't even thought about that.
Oh, you know what? I just tested it on a case insensitive file system. If you've got Mac OS by default or Windows, then no, your git ignore is in fact case insensitive as well.
Now, it'd be interesting to see if this is one of the places where different implementations of Git actually differ. You know, like if jgit and libgit2 and git, you know, git.exe or core git differ or not.
Yeah, that's right. And I suspect that different versions of Git treated this differently. I bet this changed at some point. Gitignore is one of the less well-defined standards.
Right.
As far as Git goes, regrettably.
More of a convention than a standard.
Yeah.
Guidelines.
That's right. Yeah. That's one of the interesting things about building another implementation of Git. So working on libgit2, we have to match Git. That is the standard. If Git does something, we have to be bug for bug compatible, as we say.
Wow. So you've got gitignore, so make sure you've got one of those and it's configured correctly in the root of your repository at least, and probably stick to it being in the root of your repository, because when they're buried in folders, I don't know about you, but that just confuses people because they are hidden files by default, especially on a Unix system, and people just don't notice they're there and then get very confused as to why things aren't getting checked in, because the only one they look for is the one at the root of the repo.
Yeah, the more gitignores you have, the more the complexity adds up very quickly.
Is there a performance hit as well, or not really?
Well, Git is built sort of in the Unix philosophy, where it's multiple little programs that are composed together. So if you run git merge, it's actually, the last time I looked at it, it's a shell script that invokes another shell script, depending on the arguments that you use. And then that shell script runs a bunch of other Git commands to try to, you know, figure stuff out. So it's not one program. So it's not like it opens your gitignore, parses it, and keeps it in memory. It might invoke other Git programs, and each of those might have to parse your gitignore over and over and over again. So there could be a performance hit. Now, Git is moving away from that model. Git is trying to have fewer shell scripts and more binaries, more C programs. So that's becoming less and less of a problem every version, but yeah, there could actually be some performance hits just by having multiple gitignores. And of course, the complexity of your gitignore will start to add up. If you have 1,000 rules, that's going to take longer to evaluate than if you had one rule. So if you can simplify it, you should, both for your own sanity and for Git.
Exactly. Often it's better just to mention the folder name at the beginning, you know, because you can prefix stuff by the folder name it's in within your Git repo. So you can say, like, everything within bin, like, just ignore everything that begins with bin, for example, or, you know, ignore specific files only when they're within this folder and all that sort of stuff. So.
Right, exactly. Yeah, don't exclude star.o and, you know, the name of your binary, exclude your build directory instead.
Okay. Yeah. Cool. Right, so that's gitignore. The other one, so I was installing Git for Windows, as I say today, reinstalling, doing an update, and I got the classic, what do you want to do about line endings pop-up that came up. And this is especially interesting for Unix, for a Windows developer, especially a Windows developer that does a lot of, you know, does a lot of coding for non-Windows systems.
Yep. If you're doing cross-platform stuff.
Yeah. Well, just in general, you know, and also when you, quite often you'll be pulling down, maybe you're working on a Node script or some JavaScript, which has been written by somebody on a Mac, and right. you're pulling it down to your and editing it in your Windows system. So, however, nowadays, I'm apart from the odd time I fire up Notepad accidentally, on the vast majority of my systems, I've replaced Notepad for, I use Notepad 2, but other people use Notepad++. You know, I've replaced it for a version of Notepad that can handle Unix line endings inside right. the application, doesn't get confused. So, what should be your default system setting, and in general, what should people be doing about line endings within a team?
Oh, line endings.
So go on, explain what the three options are, first of all. How about that?
When you say the three options.
More than three. Okay, there you go. There's more than three. Explain what the options are.
So the classic way, the original way to deal with line endings on Windows machines was this configuration setting called core.autocrlf. And the idea behind core.autocrlf was that you could work with people who were building a tool, work with people who were in a repository, and they were all Unix people, and they were all using Unix line endings, which is just a ASCII 10, right? You know, because Unix uses a single character at the end of a line. Windows uses two characters, a carriage return and a line feed. The problem is, like you said, Notepad can't figure out Unix line editing, so it'll just see this file.
And it's worse than that as well. There are some tools, like Visual Studio used to be guilty of this, I don't know if it still is, where it would mix, so it would be able to read a file with Unix line endings, but then when you edited it, it would insert Windows line endings rather than Unix ones, and you wouldn't tell within your editor, but then it would save it out with a mix of line endings and all sorts
of exactly.
Reasons.
And
Eclipse would do that as well, I think, you know.
Yeah. And some editors will start out with being able to cope with either Windows or Unix line endings. But then if somebody screws that up, then it will just continue to propagate the screw up. It's terrible.
Right.
And Bash cannot read Windows line endings. So if you have Windows line endings, it will fail immediately because it will look for the new line character and see that carriage return in front of it and try to execute that as part of the command line.
But there aren't many things on Windows now that I can think of that fail if passed in a bunch of files with Unix-style line endings. Like Ant used to go horribly wrong, and Perl did, and things like this. But all those things now just seem to work fine, you know, if you give them Unix-style line endings.
Right. well, so it's interesting that you say that, because Git itself was one of the bigger culprits when it came to Windows-style line endings. Even on a Windows machine.
Go on.
If you would run git diff and create a patch file on Windows, of course it would give you Windows style line endings because you're on a Windows machine and it wants to print that to the console. So it needs to do that. But if you then tried to apply that patch, it would fail. So
fabulous.
Yeah. So git itself. So git, like if you look at the history, it was built for the Linux kernel. Right. Mm-hmm. Linus Torvalds invented it for the Linux kernel. So obviously a lot of the people who were building Git came from that ecosystem and were Linux people. And very, very few of them had ever even, well,
it just wasn't a problem they had to worry about, you know?
Right. That's the politest way to put it that I could think of. And so some of the Git for Windows developers have really struggled to make inroads there. And to make people aware of the problems that cross-platform software development has and that Windows software development has. And so that's changed over time. But in the very early days of Git, you really had to be careful about your line ending configuration. And so the first way to do that was core.autocrlf, which is a configuration option that basically says, when I check out a repository, it should have Windows style line endings on disk because I'm on a Windows machine. And when I add a file to the repository, when I check something in, then take that file that has the Windows line endings on disk and put it in the repository with Unix line endings. And that was the cross-platform story for Git for the very early versions.
Now, there are people that like have a almost violently allergic reaction to a source control system futzing with the contents of their files from what they've got. Because they believe that's fundamentally wrong, you know, in terms of like it shouldn't mess with them. Because does it ever make mistakes? Like, how does it detect if it's a Unix or a Windows file system? Is it looking at the first few bytes of a file, or what's the deal?
That's a great question. What it really does is it just, I don't remember. I would have to look at the code again.
Yeah. Remember, I seem to remember it was like the first like 640 bytes or something, like something ridiculous. Like it was some weird arbitrary first number of bytes it would look at. Or it can't be that many, though. It surely would only have to go up to like 200. But anyway, and see if there was a carriage return. And if there was, then it's a Windows file ending line or whatever. I don't really know.
I think that what you described is how it determines if it's a binary file or not. It looks at the first n bytes.
Okay.
And I don't remember what n is in this case.
Yeah.
But I think that it will just basically strip out any carriage return followed by a line feed. And turn that into just a normal Windows new line. So if you had mixed line endings, it would normalize it in one way or another.
Right.
I could be wrong about that. Yeah. It's been a while since I wrote any of this code.
It
also changes.
But so auto CRLF, you're talking about that in a historical syntax. Is that not what you would recommend anymore? Because I think that's what I still have my system set to by default. So I'm evil. Go on.
So when you install Git for Windows, it gives you an option.
Yeah.
And you need to make a decision. There is no don't set anything for core.auto CRLF. It asks you, do you want to set core.auto CRLF to true, meaning that you will work with a repository and when you add files to it, they will go to Unix line endings. You could set it to false, which, like you mentioned, will not change anything about your line endings at all. And so when you git add a file that is in Windows new line endings, and commit it to the repository, it'll stay in Windows line endings in the repository. And that's a perfectly reasonable choice as well. The problem is that the place to configure that isn't core.auto CRLF. That is, that's the historic way to do it. Because the problem is that you and I could be working in the same repository, and you set core.auto CRLF to false because it's a configuration option. Your config, it's in your .git config.
Mm-hmm.
It's not checked into the repository. That config is not shared. So you could have core.auto CRLF false. I could have core.auto CRLF true. We're working in the same repository, and now we don't agree on our settings. So you're going to, I forget which one you had. I think I said that you had it set to false.
Yeah.
So whoever's got it set to false is putting Windows style line endings into the repository. Whoever's got it set to true is putting Unix style line endings into the repository. And we now just don't agree on what we're doing. So we're going to have these weird problems where you run git status and yours is clean. I run git status on the same repository and it says that I've changed files because the line endings that exist on disk aren't what I said they should be. So
that's all sorts of weird. Yeah. So what should we do? Because I know there are several different places where Git can store configuration settings. There's on your system, and then there's two of us. I think, and tell me if I'm wrong, there was in your repository and then per user, or per user and in your repository. I don't really know. Go on. So where can Git store settings, and what should you do for line endings?
So as far as configuration values, like core.auto CRLF, it could go a bunch of different places. You could store it in the repository, but not checked into the repository. So there's a .git config for your repository that will control just how things work. And then there's a user setting. So that's where all of your defaults go. And then there's a system setting, and you probably shouldn't be using.
So the system setting is how Git behaves on your machine-wide.
That's right.
Then the user setting is how Git behaves for what your particular logged-in user, which is probably where you should be configuring things.
Your name is probably a good place to put that. But then, if you had certain settings, maybe you wanted to use a different email address just for a particular repository, or just some setting just for a particular repository, you could put that in the .git/config inside the particular repository.
Interesting little tidbit there. The Azure team actually have a tool for checking out, for doing what they still call it an enlistment for doing a clone of their Git repos for a developer. And part of that tool actually involves configuring their work email address in the repository's Git config.
Right.
Because they've ran into so many occasions where somebody's working on some open source at home and some open in some work code at work or whatever. And so they've set Git up to have their home email address in because that's what they wanted to use when contributing to say something to GitHub or whatever. And they, but then they want to make sure that when they're committing into their work related Azure Git repo, that they're using their Microsoft.com email address.
Yep. I can't tell you how many times I've accidentally committed to the VSTS repo with my personal email address.
Yeah, so if it did the same thing there, that would actually be quite a handy thing to do, you know?
That's right.
Because and servers know that, which is interesting. Like VSTS knows who you've logged into VSTS as. And so it could actually help you do that. But anyway, that's a beside the point thing.
No, yeah. That's exactly right. And in fact, so I've got a blog post about setting up your email address based on what repository you're in, based on what directory you're in. So you can make sure that you keep your personal email address.
Oh, hello. I didn't know that. So you could have like, rather than just a slash source, you could have a slash source and you could have a home work or whatever.
You can change your configuration based on the directory that you're in.
Oh, so let's make sure we include this blog post in the show notes.
Definitely.
So what should people do with line endings?
Mm-hmm. So there's all these configuration options, but the best thing to do is to not put it in your configuration at all, not put it in your Git config, because that's not shared with people. What you really want to do for line endings is make sure that you configure it in the repository so that if you and I are working on the same repository, we have the same settings, no matter what our core.autocrlf settings are. And that's controlled by a file called .git attributes. It goes right next to your .gitignore file. It gets checked into the repository. That way, when you clone a repository, we have agreed on how the files will go into the repository. And so generally speaking, the easiest way to do it is just star, because again, wildcards. So your Git attributes will just contain a star, text equals auto, or whatever. I mean, you can decide whether you want to have line ending conversion from Windows to Unix on, that's text equals auto, or off, that's minus text, which means no text translations at all.
What would be your recommendation?
To be honest with you, I know that some people don't like getting their files changed when they're going into version control, but realistically speaking, most Git tools are okay with either, but there are still a couple of tools, and I go through a pass every once in a while because there will be a day when we can say, you don't need to change your line endings anymore. But the last time I did it, I think I still found one weird Git command that was a lot happier if you did the line ending conversion. So the best practice, I still think, is to do line ending conversion on a Windows machine. So star text equals auto, okay. And that will put the files on disk as Windows style on Windows and Unix style on Unix, and they'll go into the repository as Unix style. So it'll do that automatic translation.
And the advantage of doing it, does the per repo config override the per machine config?
It does.
Okay, brilliant. And then so the advantage of doing it per repo anyway is that if in the future this is no longer necessary, then you as a maintainer can decide to take that out and then it's fixed for your repository.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
Okay. So yeah, so definitely have a Git attributes in your repository. And then we need to wrap up, but is there any other, like, is there magic that you can do in Git attributes? Like, that's a file I don't touch very often. Gitignore is a file I would touch quite often. Git attributes is something I don't really go near. So is there anything else in there that's magic that we should use?
There's so much magic.
Really? Oh, okay.
So let's have another
session on Git attributes.
Yeah. And actually, we can do a real life survey. We can do another follow up to GDC where we talk about maybe the best practices for Git attributes for game developers.
There you go. Cool. Let's do that. Awesome. Hey, Ed, that was a great session. I know that probably wasn't very interesting for you, but I learned a lot. So hopefully the listeners did.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm glad you were able to join us.
Educated.
Yeah. So thanks for joining me, Martin, and thank you for listening to another episode of All Things Git.